B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Tuesday, March 19th, 2019, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the Talk of Las Vegas, 101.5 FM and 720 AM, as well as KJR 950 in Seattle, Washington. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, we'll get the latest in esports news from over at the news desk with Sarah Skopic. Plus, Google gave their keynote address at GDC this week. We'll break down all the big announcements. Those discussions are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's check in with Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get a gaming news update.
Gaming news update with Sarah Skopic.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program to bring you important news.
CheckpointXP.com.
Some interesting patents have been discovered that could have an impact on the PlayStation 5. The patent surrounds the concept of a deep learning network on the next-gen console that would identify a player's habits and abilities, customizing games to suit them. Of course, these are just patents and could amount to nothing at all.
Literally, it means that somebody like Nate, who is trash at video games, doesn't have to worry about getting chicken-hatted when he makes it the bump down to the easiest level.
Now, here's the thing, and you mentioned the chicken hat was from Metal Gear Solid 5, where if you were struggling again and again, the game would go, "Do you want a little bit of help?" And if you said yes, it would give you the chicken hat, which made you, I think it was like harder to detect.
Almost
invincible.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't just a little bit of help. It was a lot of help.
Right. And here's the thing is that I think I would, if we were going to go for a program like this, I want the appropriate amount of shame attached to it. Like, you know.
Well, you just don't want
GG, Steve. Do you want a little bit of help next map? You know,
yeah, like you just don't want to get to the end of the game and then realize, wait a minute, was I actually good at this, or was the system helping
me? Well,
I didn't know if I was being shamed.
It could also do the reverse too, where if you wanted to up the difficulty, it kind of realizes like what it is that you lean on, like in a shooter or like a fantasy game. You're using a lot of magic.
I'm pretty sure there's some manual tuning you would be.
Yeah, but I mean, like, how, when you give away the degree of freedom, you know, there is a part that you can't really control. It's up to the developer. So, you know, unless it's so transparent as to say, like, yeah, you know, you will have manual overrides every single time, I don't know how I feel about something like this.
Rumors had been swirling that Sony was looking to make a major gaming acquisition. Take-Two's shares mysteriously rose about 5% as rumors began leaking that Sony was going to purchase the company for $130 a share, a $13.7 billion acquisition. Sony cleared the air, however, saying they had no idea where those rumors were coming from and that there is no such plan.
I think that this would have been interesting had it gone through, but I'd like
but
to know
like
where
wholly unnecessary.
Yeah, where did those rumors even come from?
Right. Well, I mean, you'd guess that maybe someone at Take-Two was spreading those rumors to get the shares to bounce up, but they came right back down as soon as Sony said no.
Somebody was trying to offload something real quick.
Ooh, a little bit of insider trading or something like that. I don't know.
I don't know, man.
I mean, that's an unfounded speculation.
Yes, it is.
I don't
total
know.
Speculation.
Very
I just
very
made
much,
it up.
Very much. But here's the thing: is that I do think that this would have been an interesting, an interesting merger had it taken place. With Rockstar doing as well for Take-Two as they are, I can't see them being in a position where they need to sell.
That, I mean, that said, $13.7 billion, that would make anyone think about it.
True.
PlayerUnknown has, despite his name, become one of the more well-known gaming figures over the past couple of years. He's now officially stepping away from the development of PUBG and will instead be heading up a new division of the company in Amsterdam. The Special Projects team will focus on exploring, experimenting, and creating new technologies, tools, pipelines, and gameplay.
I mean, I have to wonder how much he's been involved with the development of PUBG ever since.
Is this a,
you know, kind of blue hole came in?
Probably not so much.
Wondering.
I mean, you got to think, as Nate said, what was his involvement at that point once it transitioned over to blue? loophole. I mean, he probably didn't have that much say at that point anyway. So, I mean, good on PlayerUnknown for, you know, keeping his name in the industry and doing some new stuff.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, how long is he more just a figurehead, or is he actually still active in the development? I mean, you're never going to actually get the answer to that question. It's almost impossible to tell.
He's still getting his check.
Yeah. He's still getting his check. And, I mean, if he gets to go on and now work on some sort of new project for PUBG, that's pretty cool.
And it seems like he is a good dude when it comes to innovation and trying new things. And so, you know, that may be very well suited for him.
Despite companies like Sony and EA opting out on E3 presentations this year, Bethesda will present their showcase on Sunday, June 9th. The theme of this year's show is Be Together. So far, the only game announced for the presentation is Doom Eternal, though it's likely we'll get some information on Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6.
There's also not another theme. The last time they did a theme, we got Bethesda Land.
Yeah. I think they're doing the stopgap years. You know what I'm saying? Like every other year.
Here's the thing.
Bethesda is going to be great.
Here's the thing. We know that Elder Scrolls 6 is waiting in the wings somewhere. They might be able to drag that out. We have heard rumors of another Fallout project, whether that's going to actually be Fallout 5 or whether that's going to be a remaster of Fallout 3 or New Vegas has yet to be determined, but I think that there's going to be plenty for them to talk about.
As last year, though?
I don't know. It's going to be tough. They filled a lot of that presentation with Fallout 76 info.
And Rage, wasn't it?
And Rage, yeah. And so I'm not sure what this year is going to be. It could be a big year if they are going to reveal more things about Elder Scrolls 6. Even the setting would be a big deal.
Yeah, it would.
Valve has announced a new tool to combat review bombing on Steam. When a game undergoes a dramatic shift in scoring, the tool will alert Steam of it and allow them to investigate. If Steam finds something shifty about the score change, they'll remove all reviews from that period of time from the game's score and allow the developer to decide which of those reviews are legitimate.
Well, I think the era of user reviews has passed. I think that having user reviews hold any weight or legitimacy is really tough because now people have tried to weaponize them and use that as a way to try to punish people who they don't agree with, and so all of them are suspect. They all become suspect. I can't verify the identity of any of these reviews. They now have all become suspect. I don't believe any of them.
I agree. It's wholly unnecessary at this point when people can just go to Reddit or other forms of social media and share their opinions there. I mean,
you're going to go on YouTube and watch someone play it anyway.
Reviews, what purpose do they actually serve?
Yeah.
We've gotten the release date for Battle 5's upcoming Battle Royale mode, Firestorm. The 64-person Battle Royale has been developed by Criterion Games, best known for the Need for Speed franchise, and will support solo, duo, and squads. The game mode will launch on March 25th for free, along with the game's third chapter of content.
This is DOA.
Guys,
this is DOA.
I'd forgotten that Battlefield 5 was a thing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's over.
How do you improve on what Apex has brought to the table? You can't because you're charging for the product and it's going to be, I think, inferior. So I don't know. I just see this being DOA.
Shroud returned to Twitch last week for the first time since his injury following a scooter accident. Only able to use one arm, he just chatted with his audience and talked about what had happened. Going 40 miles an hour on his scooter, he broke hard and flipped over the handlebars, landing on his left arm.
Ouch.
He will now need surgery to put a plate in his elbow, and his return date for streaming remains unknown.
And the thing is that on that stream, he said he deliberately landed on his left arm.
Yeah, he tried to land on his left arm because it wasn't his...
It's not his mouse arm.
That's right. Here's two... A swift recovery to Shroud. Hopefully, he'll be back on Twitch very, very soon.
And that's all for the Checkpoint XP Gaming News Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Sarah, for the update. Respawn has finally lifted the veil on their Season 1 Battle Pass for Apex Legends, and the community seems pretty lukewarm on it. While it's not predatory or scummy, it's not particularly exciting either, and it's got people wondering how long the game will hold their attention.
Yeah, so the Battle Pass, it's a pretty straightforward grind. It includes 4 skins for Wraith, Mirage, Lifeline, and the Havoc Energy Weapon. It's $10, which is pretty much in line with a Fortnite Battle Pass. Mm-hmm. Actually, the comparisons between this Battle Pass and Fortnite's first Battle Pass are pretty spot on. They're very similar.
And the value, there was a user on Reddit who crunched the numbers, and the value that you get, you know, once you complete everything, it far outweighs the $10 that you pay, but the problem is it is contingent upon you completing all that content.
It just doesn't seem sustainable to be like, hey, give me $10 to motivate motivate you to play my game.
I mean,
right? Like, shouldn't that be a built-in part of the game that the game, like, tries to motivate you itself?
I mean, it works fine for Fortnite, especially with their more recent battle passes, because they add all, like, those kind of wacky challenges in and different things. Like, it's not just like, hey, grind wins to get XP to unlock. It's like, you know, you do certain goals within the game that make you kind of feel accomplished, even if you're not the best Fortnite
player. But the thing is that Apex doesn't, at least that we've seen so far, doesn't have, like, those different goals and challenges. It does just want you to play grind to get the XP.
Yeah, and another thing why I think that a lot of people are disappointed with this also is that I still feel that while I like Apex, it's fun to play, it does lack some of the charm of other Battle Royale games. And so when they released new cosmetics, and Robbie, me and you have talked about this many times, I hate all of the cosmetics.
There's nothing real
Apex
good in there. And in fact, with this battle pass, the only one that I think is like cool and really good, and it's even for a pretty crappy gun, is the Havoc's evolving skin. The more kills you get during a match, it actually like changes and gets like cooler and better.
But, I mean that is cool. I'll give you that.
We've already got Dr. Disrespect, who said he's pretty much burning out on Apex. He needed something, you know, new to come out of this. We've got Ninja, who said he's switching back over to Fortnite to start preparing for the World Cup, which, by the way, a lot of players are going to start switching back over to Fortnite to start getting experience and ready for the World Cup.
Hey man, that price tag is so big that it's going to get people over
$30 million.
Oh yeah,
people are going to go try and make the best of that. And this is what we talked about with Apex's esports scene. I don't know that the battle passes are going to be what sustains this. An esports scene might.
I mean, is this just a burnout from battle royales in general?
Maybe
it could be. Well, listen, we want to hear from you. What do you think of the Apex Legends Battle Pass? Are you going to buy it? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, Google made some major announcements at this year's Game Developers Conference. We'll give you all the latest to wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, we'll check in with Sarah over at the Checkpoint News Desk.
What's universally hated by the internet but makes so much money?
Esports news is next here on Checkpoint XP Daily from Beasley Esports XP.
This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. My name's Nate Bender. So glad to have you along. I want to thank everyone listening on 98.5, the Sports Hub of Boston, as well as the Team 980 in Washington, D.C. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, this week played host to the Game Developers Conference, and Google made some pretty serious waves. We'll break down their announcements ahead in about 15 minutes here on Checkpoint XP Daily. But first, let's check in with Sarah Skopic over at the Checkpoint News Desk and get an eSports gaming update.
With Sarah Skopic.
Nobody likes ads, but boy, do they make money. Ad revenue is projected to continue growing in the esports scene throughout 2019 and 2020. In fact, by 2020, ad revenue is projected to cross $200 million. The same study also suggests that monthly esports viewership in the U.S. will grow to 30.3 million people, an 18% increase over 2018. In addition, esports viewership on Twitch is expected to grow by 50% through 2023, reaching 46.2 million people.
That is some really staggering numbers.
That's amazing growth. And I mean, I'll say this, it does shock me how many things I see on Twitch or YouTube that still have no advertising on them. Like when you watch a tournament and it just goes to like their splash screen in between matches, and you're like,
yeah,
Really? You couldn't find an ad to put in there?
By the way, apparently Twitch today had sent around a survey asking Twitch partners about their ad revenue. And one of our former guests, Omid Daryani of the OPG, recommended don't tell them anything. You're not obligated to tell them anything. And you know what? It's not going to be used to benefit you in any way. So I just thought that was an interesting take on that. But, I mean, we see the kind of growth that's happening in this field, and it can't be ignored. I mean, it just can't be.
The Call of Duty League franchise slots will not come cheap, according to reports. It's not too surprising for anyone who remembers how expensive Overwatch League franchises were at that league's inception. Call of Duty League slots will carry a $25 million price tag. Activision Blizzard seems confident they'll be able to replicate the success they've seen with Overwatch League, but how much growth potential Call of Duty still has remains a mystery.
That's the big question there.
Seems
very high.
Dumb high. Not just high, dumb high.
Now, considering that they now have the infrastructure built in, that still seems high to me.
It does. Because you can't put them all in the same cities that already have Overwatch League teams unless, you know, they're going to share arenas, which I can't see an owner of an Overwatch team wanting to do that.
I mean, are their schedules going to be overlapping? CWL going to be active at the same time that OWL is?
Yeah, what if it was a lot of, if you're doing it in either a different season, that gives something else to have happening in those arenas Overwatch League isn't happening.
Yep.
Or if it's a different time of the week, or even what we see a lot of times in pro sports, hey, while one team's away, the other team is playing a home game.
But that's true. My point is that with all that, so much logistically has to go right and so many deals and contracts have to be signed between organizations that I can't see that justifying $25 million to even just participate.
If they say Call of Duty League is going to run from the end of July or beginning of August through December, well, okay, now we're suddenly hitting on a time of the year where there's not a ton of esports going on except for League of Legends wrapping up.
That's very true, but at the same time, Call of Duty is still very specialized. It's kind of, for as popular as it once was, it does seem to kind of have niched back down into, very kind of like college bro gamer sort of.
Very Mountain Dew.
Very Mountain Dew, Doritos sort of thing. So, like, I'm not sure that it has the same, appeal that it did maybe 10 or even 15 years ago.
Tekken has teamed up with Twitch for this year's incarnation of the Tekken World Tour. The tour begins in Lyon, France on April 20th, and events will continue throughout the year with the finals in Bangkok, Thailand. In total, there is $185,000 up for grabs in the 2019 World Tour.
That's not enough money.
That's the thing, is like that tournament in Lyon only has a $5,000 prize pool.
That's not enough money. And again,
I'm not flying to France for a $5,000 prize pool.
Again, I am so disappointed and so tired of seeing these really low, minuscule prize pools that comes with FGC tournaments. And I get it, they're trying to monetize stuff through, you know, season passes and microtransactions, but you already are pushing that to a cohort of gamers that have shown that that's something that they're not wholly accepting right now. So,
Overwatch League Commissioner Nate Nanzer has confirmed that the 2020 season of Overwatch League will fully implement home and away games. While some games are being played home and away this year, it's still very much a proof of concept. That won't be the case as we go into Season 3, with every team in the league set to move into their home stadium. This will mark the first true home and away paradigm in esports.
I am so excited for this.
This is so exciting.
I think it's hugely exciting.
Stepping it up.
I have logistical concerns, mostly because I'm an anxious person, and this seems like a lot to be able to figure out. But if there's anyone who's going to be able to do it, I think it's Blizzard in the OWL. So good luck to them. This is very ambitious, and I wish them the best.
One of the most popular mods in recent memory for Dota 2 has been the Auto Chess. The mod just recently crossed 6 million players, is now looking to make the jump to mobile. Its creators, Gerudo Studios, are stripping out all Dota assets for the mobile version, but will still allow players to link to their Steam account. It's also launching a competitive scene through Imba TV, which will boast a $1.5 million prize pool.
This is interesting.
How does this get $1.5 million, but there's only $140,000 for Tekken?
Correct. Auto Chess is interesting. If you haven't got a chance to see what it is, it's an 8-player kind of tactical turn-based game where you pick a unit, it goes on the board. It kind of functions on its own by its own rules.
Sure.
Your goal is like the resource management and making your army effectively. It's actually a really cool idea, and I think mobile is the perfect platform for it because it's got that turn-based element to it. APM doesn't matter and
stuff
like that.
Sure,
interesting idea, but again, how can Tekken only get together, $185,000 was it?
Yeah. Something like that.
ESPN has announced the creation of the Collegiate Esports Championship. The tournament will invite hundreds of colleges across the U.S. and Canada to qualify. The event itself will be held during Comic-Palooza in Houston, Texas at the George R. Brown Convention Center. Players will be able to compete in Hearthstone, Heroes of the Storm, StarCraft II, Overwatch, and Street Fighter V. Action gets underway May 10th through the 12th.
This is exciting. We've been wondering how the collegiate scene is going to end up coming together. Interesting that ESPN is the one step in to kind of try to congeal all of these different colleges and educational programs that are geared toward esports now into a tournament. I think that's very cool.
Right. I mean, we've had things like the Collegiate Championship was held at the Fiesta Bowl in years past. That's being done away with in favor of this esports Collegiate Championship that ESPN is running. I think the game choices are kind of interesting. It's interesting to see both Hearthstone and Heroes of the Storm at this event. TESPA's been running the Heroes of the Storm scene collegiately for a long time, so I can see why they're kind of just trying to piggyback off that. But awesome to see Overwatch and StarCraft there as well, so cool.
Yeah.
The horrific attacks in New Zealand last week claimed the life of a former Counter-Strike pro. Atta Crazy Arab Elian was among the 50 slain in the mass shooting. Elian won multiple tournaments in the early 2000s playing Counter-Strike Source for the team New Type. The 33-year-old man is survived by his wife and daughter.
That is just terrible.
Obviously, yeah, horrific events, and our hearts go out to everyone affected by that.
That's all for the Checkpoint XP Esports Gaming Update. For more, head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com.
Thanks, Sarah, for the update. Last weekend saw the kickoff of the Capcom Pro Tour season at Final Round 2019. The world's best were on hand in Atlanta. So, Norris, how did it go?
It was awesome, man. In the way that, you know, the big premier events are always awesome. But
you had been without Street Fighter V competitively for a minute. Like, I mean, not to say that there's no competitive Street Fighter V, but when the Pro Tour season isn't running, yeah, it's you're watching the minor leagues, effectively.
Yeah, no, you want majors, and majors is where all the drama happens, where all the excitement is. And this tournament was no slouch. It really, really, really lived up to the billing that it had going in, and essentially, you had somebody who really needed sort of a redemption arc going into the beginning of the season, and that's the American Street Fighter V player Punk. Now, we talked about Punk in 2017, excuse me, all year long.
The entire circuit.
Easily the best Street Fighter V player on Earth at the time. And last year, he just kind of just faded away. He couldn't sustain that level of play.
Because he kind of... I don't remember. Did he win the Capcom Pro Tour that year, or did he flame out in the finals?
He flamed out in the finals. Really, you could say the downturn was at that Evo in 2017, mm-hmm. where he wasn't able to beat Taquito in the grand finals.
Right.
But in this, he was as prolific and as great as I've ever seen him. I mean, he got put in losers fairly early in pools, but he went the whole way through losers, took out really, really, really important people like Oil King, Jan, Justin Wong, 801 Strider.
These
are household names that he took out, and got all the way to the grand finals, where he reset the bracket in less than 5 minutes.
Whoa! Wow.
Quick turnaround.
Yeah, it was nuts. And even though in the bracket reset, the Japanese player he was up against, Momochi, was able to take one game off him, it didn't look competitive really at all. Punk was that much better than him in the grand finals, and this pretty much guarantees him essentially a spot in Capcom Cup at the end of the year. The premier events are worth a lot of points, and unless he just falls off the face of the earth, he's pretty much going to be there at the end of the year.
Now, other than Street Fighter V, there were other games that were being played. What were some of the results of some of the other games?
Yeah, so in Dragon Ball FighterZ, we had Goichi taking down the champion from last year, Kazunoko, in Dragon Ball FighterZ. Sonic Fox was eliminated in top eight, unfortunately.
Man.
And then we had the American Shadow 20. He was the winner in Tekken 7. And an old school player that I haven't heard from in a long time, Mexican Lolo, he won in Soul Calibur 6.
Well, congratulations to all the winners. Listen, we want to hear from you. Were you watching Final Round? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP, Google held their keynote address at this year's Game Developers Conference. We'll break it down ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily from Beasley Esports XP.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on ESPN Radio 1300 AM in New Haven, Connecticut, as well as Fox Sports 910 AM in Richmond, Virginia. Make sure you're following us on our officially partnered Twitch channel over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. We've got tons of new emotes, including each of our beautiful faces, as well as not one but two cat emotes. Tolly and Fritz, our actual cats, are now Twitch emotes. And there's also Sarah. We've got a brand new emote and another new emote that is being voted on by our audience. There's only one place to get them. That's over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. Google made one of the biggest announcements at GDC this year when they unveiled their new gaming platform, Stadia. Rather than a piece of hardware, the platform will run entirely through existing Google technologies and stream games to any Google-enabled device.
Yeah, so this is being headed up by a former Microsoft higher-up, Phil Harrison. Their vision is a kind of a one-stop shop for content producers, gamers, and developers to kind of all work off this one platform. It's very much like what we saw with Project Stream late last year, where That's people right. were able to stream Assassin's Creed Odyssey onto their browser. They took that as their proof of concept that, yes, you can stream 60 FPS, 1080p to a browser. It is possible.
So essentially what this creates, kind of in layman's terms, is sort of like the dream that game companies have been after, which is the Netflix of games. And this is remarkably close, because what we're talking about here is hardware that you own, not needing the core game graphics acceleration that you need to be able to run, you know, games like Assassin's Creed.
That's right.
If your laptop can handle Chrome, it can handle the game that you want to play.
And then the hands-on demonstration that they showed on the thing, and again, you know, I always take live demonstrations of certain, like,
grain of salt. Absolutely.
But it works.
It seems like it works. They had a range of different products that they were switching between and being able to still play Assassin's Creed in the exact same
delivery.
Yeah, seamlessly, and with, you know, kind of like perfect frame rate representation. They were able to go through a low powered Chromebook. They were able to go through a phone.
Yep.
They were able to go through a medium powered like laptop.
Yep.
PC.
And they said the cheapest PC they could find on the premises.
Literally the cheapest PC that they could find, and even a internet-enabled television that you could throw the signal to in a Chrome stick.
In a Chromecast, yeah. Literally the idea is that you could be, let's say you're on YouTube watching someone play Assassin's Creed Odyssey, you could click play now, it'll load it up in a browser in as quick as 5 seconds, no download, no patch, start playing.
It's pretty incredible. And
very ambitious.
Here's the thing, is that I have been kind of an enthusiastic consumer of remote play technology, right?
Yeah.
I was a
My Steam Link.
My Steam Link is what I've been using most recently to be able to play games, you know, thrown to a TV, played through most of New Vegas that way. And I was also one of the early adopters for the Vita the remote play on the Vita. And my biggest concern when I hear a technology like this from someone who's actually been using it for a long time is that the first thing that you're going to need is, while you don't need all of the high-powered hardware, you do need an absolutely rock-solid internet connection.
And I'll say this, as somebody who has fiber at the crib, like, the ping, input lag, and that stuff, those were negligible. They were not factors when I was able to try out Project Steam.
Right.
I was able to play the game in the same way that I would play it on my console. However, I also pay $100 for my internet to have gigabit internet.
That's right.
The average American consumer does not have that.
Well, as soon as you put any of your devices onto Wi-Fi, that is a toss-up right there.
Yep.
Because Wi-Fi can intermittently drop packets. Now, if you're browsing the internet, you don't notice it. But if you're playing something like a game, you notice it quite a bit because you'll get, you know, some very, very undesirable
right.
results in the game. And so I think that that is my first primary concern. And the second is that, you know, if this is supposed to democratize gaming technology and allow, you know, people who maybe have been priced out of playing those AAA games, if it's supposed to do that, my concern is that they're just shifting the cost from the upfront, you know, hardware cost and shifting that to what you will inevitably be paying your ISPs because you're eating up so much bandwidth.
And bandwidth overages.
This is definitely going to consume a lot of bandwidth.
I mean, they're talking about streaming 8K, man.
That's what I'm saying. 4K, 8K, we know that from video services, anyone streaming those, if you have a data cap on your ISP, you're dangerously close to hitting it. We stream out of my, my studio every single day.
We've
and
still
I get,
hit it on occasion.
I get very close to hitting that cap. And so, you know, trying to stream the data associated with the game, I think that there is some concerns that it will be not very cost effective when it comes down to paying for all of that data consumption.
And I think that that is a very, very big issue that would probably need to be addressed at some point down the line. But the one thing I will say, though, is that what they presented in this keynote is very ambitious. It's still very exciting. I mean, they're talking about save states, essentially being able to stop where you are exactly in the game and share it with your friends, and they pick it up from there.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on Nashville Sports Radio, WNSR 560 AM and 95.9 FM, as well as 103.9 in Lexington, Kentucky. We're currently talking about Google's presentation at GDC where they unveiled Stadia, and I do want to talk about some of these, you know, content creator and socially focused features that are coming along with Stadia, because as you had said, Norris, one of the features that they're talking about putting in is a linkable save state. Where you can literally click a link and be put into the exact same
moment.
Yeah. It's like a timed YouTube link, except you time into that spot in the game and start playing.
Exactly. Which I think that's very incredible. Like, that's very cool. But also something that's been done for a long time, you know, like emulators. But save state trading has been a thing for a while, and it's just interesting to see how it's being adapted. The other thing that I thought was very cool from this presentation is being able to watch a content creator playing something live and then join in that game.
Right. Actually literally like lobby people who are watching you, and like you'll click and say, hey, I want to play with this person. It'll put you in the lobby, and then you'll be, you know, queued in basically to play with the person you're watching.
Exactly. Now that I think actually has some really interesting merit, and you know, for an organization like ours is huge, because we, you know, we have millions of people who listen to the show every week, and it would be great to interact with them in a real meaningful way and have them come kick our butt at whatever game we're playing.
Will it have the games? That's going to be the question.
That is the ultimate question.
I mean, to that point though, at launch, Unreal and Unity are going to fully support the Stadia platform, as is going to the Havoc, CryEngine, and AMD. Like, those are some major names. In fact, they had from id Software, they had Doom Eternal is going to be on it, and I mean, Doom Eternal is going to be a brand new release that'll be appearing on Stadia, fully supported by it. So yeah, they're clearly making an effort to have the games. In fact, Google has launched their own game developer studio, Stadia Interactive, right?
Yep. And there's a whole lot more that goes along with it in terms of, you know, being able to provide hardware acceleration that most people at home can't provide, so you can push games to do different stuff. I think that this technology is going to be hugely transformative, but will it be quickly adopted? That remains to be seen. Well, listen, we want to hear from you. Are you impressed by the Stadia announcement? Connect with with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint underscore XP on Instagram. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website at checkpointxp.com for insight on esports and gaming, as well as our growing collection of podcasts and interviews. Make sure you tune in tomorrow, and we'll ask our social media followers what their all-time favorite gaming soundtrack is and why. And join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Thanks to our executive producing team of Buzz Knight, Mike Thomas, and Rick Scott. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Producing and booking help from Christine Solis. Big thanks to Sarah Skopik over at the Checkpoint News Desk, and of course my co-hosts who pulled double duty as producers for Checkpoint XP. Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Abe Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.